And so for my last review of the plays for this year, the eighth one I've done, As You Like It, a play that's grown and grown on me over the years, deceptively slight on the surface, but it has numerous depths. But most of all, of course, it's just great fun. I saw it twice, as is my common approach before I do a review, once at the front and once at the back. It's was at King's College and is directed by Marco Gil... I've got his name all wrong now. Marco Gilardi. How's that, Marco? Pretty bad, probably. The play opens and we're straight into Oliver v. Orlando, a brotherly fight, taking us all the way back to all the brotherly fights of history. The physical fight does break out after Oliver slaps Orlando in the face, and Oliver is just so bloody horrible in this opening scene that you just want to kill him. Well done to John Belitho Jones for bringing all that out in him and making sure that we all detest him. Soon we have Lawrence Watling as the fearsome fighter Charles, whom Orlando takes on. About the most fearsome thing about Charles, apart from his body tattoos, is his accent. I wonder where he got that accent for. It sounds as though he wants to be menacing. And menacing he does sound, and a very menacing figure he makes. You can see it in the way he takes his clothes off to prepare for the fight, and his overall posture and demeanour throughout. He's not actually naturally bulkier looking than Orlando, but his acting is so good it makes it clear that he is the strong favourite to win the wrestling match, as per the play text would tell you. So that was very well done. Lots of major things to like about it. One of the biggest things was having the two Dukes, the same actor. This works really well, I think, because it gives you, to use a later cultural and literary trope, it gives a Jekyll and Hyde effect to the good Duke and the bad Duke, as it were. And we've got Duke Senior as a religious cult-type leader, which is an interesting take on it. Not so much Robin Hood as some kind of, as I say, cult leader, with his followers devotedly looking at him and shaking with ecstasy when he as much as touches them. It reminds us, of course, that Oliver and Orlando are also Jekyll and Hyde characters. And it's quite an interesting thing that goes all the way through the play until they're made whole at the end, and holy Jekyll at that, with the contrived comic ending. Back to near the beginning, though, when Timothy Wesson came on as Touchstone, the whole place lit up. He's a comic natural who just lifts the spirits of everyone who meets him, and the audience en masse reacted very well. Meanwhile, Alec Gray was quite lovely as Adam, which makes his onstage death that closes the first half all the harder to bear. It was most poignantly done and cast an interestingly darker shade over the interval than the rest of the play would lead you to expect. The song after he died was really quite beautiful. But more of that later. What about Orlando and Rosalind, you'll be thinking? Well, William LeCour and Scarlett Barrett were just absolutely fabulous. The love bits when they first met were just hysterically well done. Orlando being struck speechless by the sight of Rosalind was so funny after he'd just taken on Charles. Now, taking on Charles was a mighty challenge, but easy peasy compared to being love struck. Rosalind herself, such a strong character throughout the play, one of Shakespeare's best female roles, surely, instantly fell into girlish love. Cupid got right through her, and she was as helpless in her own way as Orlando was in his. Another thing Rosalind did, which I really liked, was she said, "This is the Forest of Arden," in a completely new way. I love that when you have well-known phrases that are presented in a different way. It must be a heck of a challenge to actors. I always worry, always feel sorry for the whoever's playing Hamlet when they come up to the "to be or not to be" speech. It just seems such an Everest of a challenge. It's so many times done before. Everybody in the audience knows it, and you have to somehow make it alive at the time. There's an example of that later on in this play, actually, which we'll come to anon. But I was mentioning, I'm just jumping about all over the place. I was mentioning Lawrence Watling as the menacing Charles, but when he gets to Silvius, it's completely the opposite, because Silvius is as weak and spineless as Charles was strong and menacing. And Silvius's lovelorn pleading was absolutely irresistible. Everybody in the audience loved him, and we all wished him success. You could actually feel it every time he spoke. This is in no small part due to the way he lamented repeatedly, "Oh, Phoebe." I'm not even trying to imitate it, because I could never do it anything like not only not as good as he can do it, but I couldn't even do it to give you a hint of what it was like. You really have to go and hear it if you haven't already. Definitely the catchphrase of the CSF year in just two short words. But those two short words were absolutely aching with unrequited love. As I left last night, I heard three different people in three different conversations intoning this in an imitation of Lawrence's pronunciation to general mirth from all around. I mentioned in my review of Tempest that Lawrence's staring eyes were very effective. Well, they were a feature here again. This time they were actually matched by his paramour, who also had a hell of a gaze on her. This is Karen Kazza-White, a very impressive Phoebe, but oh, how I longed for her to give Silvius what he wanted. Which he did get in the end, of course. As ever in the CSF, doubling and tripling and so forth is very important. And I noticed Charlotte Green, who's going to come up in a minute or two, and Kazza, if I may use that nickname, and Kazza again coming out in green cloaks to be the acolytes to the Duke's sort of forest community, the representative acolytes, I mean. I should mention at the same time that Matthew Stewart was in multiple roles, brilliantly fierce and tyrannical as Rosalind's bad uncle, something out of your worst Grimm's fairy tale at one point. Alec Gray as well, it wasn't just Adam, he was a very knowing Corrin amongst other roles, a Corrin who saw through Rosalind's disguise right away. Of course, I haven't mentioned Jacques yet, and Jacques is one of my favourite characters in all of Shakespeare. I'm not exaggerating with that. I think it's possibly because so many of my friends say that he's just like me. That's the melancholy, cynical bit, I'm afraid. And the thing is, they're right, and I take it as a compliment, not as an insult. But when this one started, I thought, oh my god, I'm not going to like it. It's John Belitho Jones in his other two major roles for him in the one play. When he started, I thought, oh, I'm not going to like this very much. He seems a bit snivelling, a bit nasty, maybe just a bit whiny. And then I realised that was only for a minute or two, and he changed. He actually seemed to have many, many different facets of Jacques. It was a very complex portrayal. His character seemed to change depending on the situation he was in, and it struck me that this is reasonable enough for someone in his position. In fact, it's probably a very good survival technique for someone in his position in his society at that time. And his speech, just jumping to the very end of it, his speech at the end, when he said he will live in the forest, was scornfully derided by the rest of the cast, as though it was just another one of his fancies. But I found it very moving and dignified. At the same time, knowing that the cast were alerting me to remember to doubt him, it was a real mixture of emotions at the end. But I certainly liked Jacques again before he went off to the cave to wait, that's for sure. And when I started liking him, was it the most important bit of all, the Seven Ages speech. It's really quite a strange speech, this, because it doesn't really propel the action anywhere in particular. And as Dr. Emma Smith has pointed out, it was probably written with the intention of being chosen for an Elizabethan commonplace book, which were extraordinarily important to society at the time, and extraordinarily important to writers who wanted to be remembered. And it is a set speech, and it's wonderful. And it can very often seem like that, a set speech just set away from everything else. What happens here, and is really well done, is it's enacted in a way that makes it live and part of the play. So when I said it isn't part of the action as such, that's the usual case. In this particular production, it is made to be part of the action by John Belitho Jones's just quite brilliant portrayal of it. And what he does is he points to people in the audience as representatives of each age of man. That's something which I'm sure has been done before when an audience is close enough to do this to. But he was very alert in picking out people who fitted exactly. The schoolboy, then the soldier. Unfortunately, as he moved up through the ages to people who were more elderly and perhaps had a little bit of a paunch, shall we say, he pointed at me, the scamp. But I was delighted, of course. I always love those kinds of things. They stick with me for years afterwards. And then, as he moved to the end of the Seven Ages, it really became very, very fraught indeed. The existential despair of the ending was really overwhelming. And the actor himself bent his head into his hands and sobbed. And it was really quite moving. And just when you were taking in the depths of that despair and those lines, which are really quite terribly bleak when you think about them. Immediately after that, the lovely Adam died. And then we had, as I mentioned before, we had a very moving song. The whole scene when he died was just quite beautifully done. And then we had the hi-ho sing hi-ho song. A bitter winter wind indeed, but beautifully played and keeping up the tradition this year of there being good music in virtually all the plays. I said earlier that Charlotte Green would be reappearing later, and she reappeared to some effect as Audrey. Really terrible Audrey. I mean, terrible in the sense of being well played, but just well, you have to go and see it again. I know I keep saying that, but that's the point about live theatre. I'm talking about it to give you my feedback, but really experiencing it for yourself is always the only thing that can bring these things over. Anyway, Audrey came on scratching her bottom, making many a coarse gesture and action. And so much so, actually, so good was her opening scene that it got a spontaneous round of applause the first night I was there from the entire audience. It's quite a contrast to her and Rosalind giving a brilliant long speech to Orlando. I should say, by the way, that the Scarlett Barrett's voice projection throughout the night was absolutely excellent. I was right at the back, actually behind the audience as such, so I was further away than she needed to reach, or anyone needed to reach, and she reached me perfectly. I haven't mentioned my friend, if I may be so bold, my friend Tim Weston much yet. He spent an awful lot of time on the ground. Everybody kept hitting him and he kept falling down. I started to get quite worried about him. And he spent the latter half of the play mostly drunk. Something I've seen him act before, and he's very effective at it. I've also not mentioned Celia. Sorry, Rosalind Mitchell. Rosalind's facial expressions in the second half are particularly good. When the Rosalind Ganymede and Orlando plot takes on ever more dangerous, or sorry, moves into ever more dangerous areas and skates on very thin ice, resulting in a fake marriage at which Celia is reluctantly forced to officiate. Well, her facial expressions then are just priceless. She's a perfect Celia to Scarlett Barrett's wonderful Rosalind. They make a great pair. And then John Bolitho Jones comes back as Oliver. And I said he plays two major parts, Jacquarius and Oliver. But in a way, it's three major parts because we've got Oliver at the beginning of the play being completely horrible. We've got Jacquarius, and then we've got Oliver at the end of the play. But Oliver at the end of the play is a completely different person. He's been converted. And he's as good now as he was once bad. And of course, this is because Orlando saved his life by risking his own life in a forest duel with first a snake and then a lioness. Yes, it's that kind of play. A lot of fairy tale elements in it. Well, Oliver quickly finds out that Rosalind is in fact female, and they do this with a tremendous visual pun. She swoons at the sight of the handkerchief soaked in Orlando's blood and falls back into Oliver's arms. He captures her and his hands go onto her breasts. And by his facial expression, you can see right away that he certainly knows that she is no man. And the pun, the visual and the visual enactment of a pun is on the line. This was not... Oh, sorry, she claims to him, "Tell Orlando I counterfeited fainting," and he replies, "This was not counterfeit. There is too great testimony in your complexion." And on the words "too great," he holds up his hands as two, to pun on T-W-O, T-double-O. Well, okay, it doesn't sound good when I'm saying it here probably, but it was very, very funny on stage. One of the most effective things of the whole night, possibly actually the most effective thing of the whole night, was the long speech about what love is with Sylvia's Phoebe, Orlando and Rosalind intoning the same lines one after each other. I for Ganymede, I for Rosalind, and I for no woman. I'm sure you all know the speech. Incidentally, it's got a very moving bit in the middle where Sylvia's becomes a character of tremendous poetic beauty when he's asked to define what love actually is. Anyway, I'm sure you all know these famous lines. But the way they did it was they had all four of them set across a wide part of the stage, intoning one to the other, and it was just excellent, really. So it's been praised all the way through. And then, to be honest, I wasn't quite so convinced by the ending as I had been by everything up till then. Part of my problem was the actual doubling of Touchstone as Hyman. So Hyman was played by Touchstone, who was in Touchstone character as well as in Hyman character. And since Touchstone was very, very drunk at this point, I'm not so sure all of that worked. It's perhaps just me, but I didn't find this as satisfying as the rest. But it was very, very funny, I have to admit, and the audience responded and loved it, so perhaps that's me being a pedant again. The epilogue itself was very, very lovely indeed, and the whole night ended to a huge and well-deserved applause. Well done to everybody, and I'll see it again next week.